So if you'd like, let's begin. I'd like to introduce our moderator, Josh Burnoff. Josh has been with Forrester since 1995 and is the vice president of their devices, media, and marketing research team. Josh's in-depth understanding of media, broadcast, and technology has allowed him to foresee significant trends on the horizon, including the rise of the personal video recorder. Josh has been interviewed on 60 Minutes, where he was identified as the top TV industry analyst at Forrester Research, an authority on where TV is going. Josh's latest effort is the development of Forrester's Tech Potential Service, which allows consumer-focused companies to estimate unit sales of new pipeline products, but factoring aspects such as design, usability, distribution, marketing, and viral adoption. This model has been applied to TiVo, Netflix, and Slingbox to highlight his real-world power. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Josh Burnoff.
Thanks very much, and it's great to be here. I'm glad to have been brought all the way over from Cambridge to participate in this event. So to understand what the changes in media feel like, I want you to, you know, many of you are entrepreneurs or investors in a position to profit from all this change, but put yourself for a moment in the position of a media executive. In fact, I want you to imagine that you work for a music company and it's 1999. And you start to hear about this little thing called Napster. Well, we at Forrester have looked at the evolution that those companies went through, and the simplest model we've got is five stages, which correspond to stages you may have heard from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross looking at death and dying, because that's what it felt like, right? The music executive in 1999, the first reaction is denial. Hey, you know, this doesn't make any difference to us. People have been taping our shows forever. Doesn't affect the sales of our records. We then move on to anger. All right, Napster, I'm going to sue your ass. From there, we go to bargaining. Hey, maybe if we make a subscription service, we can make some money from this. Depression, which I think corresponds to losing 20% of your sales, which is what's happened to the music companies in the last 6 years. And finally, acceptance. Yes, Mr. Jobs, you can put our content on your service. But amazingly, the music companies, after going through all of these stages, have managed to reinvent themselves to go beyond the single product of CDs and actually become a multi-product company, making money from ringtones, making money from iTunes, making money from subscription services, and anything else that you can come up with. So the question I think we want to look at now is, how is that going to affect businesses like video and other elements of the media business, and will they have to go through a lot of this same pain the music industry went through in order to be successful? Just a couple of statistics for you. Last fall, in a survey we did, 46% of U.S. consumers said that they watched video, this is online consumers, watched video, online video on a regular basis. Our home network numbers, which are going to get released in the next 2 weeks, show that home networks have doubled to almost 20% of the online population now. And unlike many of the other transformations that have happened in digital media, this one comes with a business model built in. When we surveyed sites last fall, they told us that they were getting $25 CPMs for advertising in online video. That's cost per 1,000 viewers, which is a rate that any television network would die for. And going back to those same people, you know, over the last few months, it appears that that $25 has gone up and not down. So there's a lot of opportunity here and a lot of challenges for the media companies. And that's what we're going to talk to the panelists about today. So let me introduce who's up here with me. Vin Bhatt is over to my left. He comes to us from 212 Media, a company that launches new media ventures in partnership with large media companies like Time Warner. And one of these companies that he's incubated is called Bollywood and Beyond, a company that acquires, markets, and distributes Bollywood and other South Asian content for on-demand service on cable, the web, and on mobile carriers. Next to him is Shobha Purushottaman. Is that?
Very good.
I've been practicing all day. She's the CEO and founder of The News Market, a company that distributes video for brands like Pfizer, Intel, BMW, and others to news organizations around the world through a web-based platform. Next to her, and on my left, your right, is Jeremy Allaire, one of the founders of Allaire, a successful company that was sold to Macromedia a little while ago, and is now the CEO of Brightcove. Brightcove is a service that makes it easy to publish video on the web for publishers, both large and small. And it's a free service to the publishers. It actually gets its money by selling advertising. And, in fact, didn't take long to find out that Vin is using the Brightcove service, actually, to distribute their content. And to my right is Paul Sagan, the CEO of Akamai, one of the definite technology success stories of the last 5 years. Right now handling 10 to 20% of all web traffic as it delivers rich media content for customers like Apple and Yahoo. And also, we did a survey at Forrester of all of the different people who do this sort of content distribution network, and Allaire was the clear leader in that comparison, which is now available from us if you're looking for that. Did I say Brightcove? I said Allaire. How did I do that?
We don't even exist anymore.
Akamai. Well, it's a name that everyone in this audience knows except for me. So I'm going to start with this question. And media companies right now are having to deal with this sort of change, and I'm specifically thinking about companies like News Corp and CBS that have now had to deal with the desire to put this content online, and it creates a lot of internal turmoil. So let me start with you, Paul. When you talk to these media company clients, what's your advice for them on how to actually deal with this internal conflict and embrace the possibilities of this new digital media world?
Thanks, Josh. I try to tell them a couple of things. The first is that we've reached prime time in broadband. And by that I mean there are enough people who are now connected with broadband at home and at work that they can find an audience, or their competitors will find an audience, that's big enough to make their business model work. So if we think of prime time in the TV sense, it was 8 to 11 p.m. East Coast time in the U.S. When there are enough people who watch TV, or the most people who watch TV, that the networks could slice that up and make a lot of money. That's now available online, that there are enough people, not just between 8 and 11 p.m., in fact, it spreads across the day, but where people can find a business model and enough people to match it. So we see that with iTunes. We see that with online baseball games. We see that with sporting events. We see that across the board today with popular media content. And then the other thing I tell them that I think they need to accept and then get to the Internet as fast as they can is that the Internet is now, for many people, the first choice medium for content. I think until a couple of years ago, that wasn't true except for early adopters and tech folks, because the Internet was still kludgy and it was largely dial-up at home for people. So it was a supplement. There were some aspects of the Internet that were critical or unique, like instant messaging, but it wasn't where most people went first for news or first to be entertained. And I think we've now crossed a line where for a significant cohort, particularly a very attractive financial one, meaning young people with disposable income, it is the first place they go to get informed or to be entertained or to communicate. And so if you're one of those big media companies, you need to understand that that's where the audience is, and that's where the audience goes first. And so you better take your content there, and you better find your model that works and treat it as a primary distribution channel, not just as a marketing channel or as an annoyance.
So, Jeremy, you've had to deal with both very large media companies who are interested in distribution through this space and also small companies like Bollywood and beyond. Can you characterize for us sort of the difference in attitude that you get from them? Are the big guys going to learn from what's going on with the little guys, or are they just not going to be able to get that?
No, it's actually interesting. I think really even in the last 6 months, it's just very clear how sweeping the change is at every level of the media business. The medium to large programmers and publishers, it is certainly not a question of whether they should be building a business in this space. They are all focused on it. They're all putting investments into digital media leadership. And really, the focus is on what should their strategy be? What kind of content assets do they have rights to? How are they going to package that and program it so that it's meaningful and a good experience for consumers? How are they going to build audience? I mean, it's really classic production, programming, distribution types of problems and questions that they're trying to answer. No one's asking the question, should we do this? And so, unlike 1999, this is front and center, CEO level and down in these organizations. And sort of at the high end, that is, I think it's fair to characterize that. That's not to say it's not without challenges for them, because these are nascent experimental businesses largely. They're not generating or throwing off a lot of revenue and profit compared to their existing businesses. And there's an inherent channel conflict that is in place, which they'd all love to avoid, in particular the distribution relationships with cable operators and the TV side of things. But they have contract issues that prevent them from taking advantage of the content that way. But in general, at that medium to large side, it's very deep embrace and a focus on strategy. On the emerging side, so smaller producers and emerging media companies, it's interesting. It's a very entrepreneurial space, and we see startups emerging in content categories almost every week that are building essentially broadband networks. They're building internet-based networks. And I think there's sort of two audiences on that small side. There's one, which is there's a whole audience of people who produce content, independent production businesses and the like, and they're struggling with what role do they play. They don't know how to build a website, how to drive traffic to it, how to market it, and so they're looking for people who can help them get distribution. And then there are others that are look essentially like new TV networks but all run over broadband and who are aggregating content within a category like Bollywood and Beyond or in parenting or in comedy or in a music category or whatever it would be, and are basically startup content ventures that are trying to build micro channels for internet audiences and moving at as fast a pace, if not a faster pace, than some of the larger companies. So I think one of the things we'll actually see is we'll see dozens and dozens of broadband channels that are startups that get launched. Some will be successful and many will be acquired as well.
One of the things I'd like to get at here is how the innovation around the world is going to be different. I know, for example, places like Korea, the broadband delivery of television content is commonplace. Here you have all sorts of anguish about channel conflict. Vin, you've been able to be successful with the South Asian content. Can you give us an idea of how different attitudes are around the world around on this?
Yeah, thanks, Josh. The content that we have today is a library of mostly movies, Bollywood movies, and also a tremendous library in music. So in the context of video, it's mostly music videos. And we have distribution in about 11 million households across the U.S., mostly with Time Warner Cable, Comcast, Cablevision, and some other cable operators. So the channel conflict from us, I think, first of all, channel conflict happens anytime you have a fast-growing and a fast-changing market. And it's not just with small companies like us, but it's the big guys like Yahoo severing its relationship with Google, or the tension between television networks and all of their affiliate stations. The conflict that we kind of went through, and we're still kind of going through right now, is just one between the cable operators and then just independent video services, including our own video service that's online. And the decision that we kind of had to make, although it wasn't stipulated in our contract, was to be more supportive of our cable operators in the beginning, just because that's where the primary amount of our cash flow is coming from today. But that being said, what we kind of implemented was a window where we said that, you know, the movies would be put on these cable operators for the first, let's say, 3 to 6 months, and then after that airtime, we'd put them on to services that we go direct to the consumer with, like with Brightcove, or services like Google Video or Movie Link or Cinema Now or any of the other 25 services that are out there. So we kind of did a self-imposed resolution for this channel conflict, only because we didn't want to, you know, bite the hand that's feeding us right now. But that being said, once we kind of see more evidence and more traction within the online video space for both long and short form content, we're going to go back to those same cable operators and say either we cut another deal, or, you know, we're just going to cut this concept of a window out and just go to the consumer any which way we can.
Shoba, do you want to comment on the global differences? You had mentioned that in our conversation earlier.
Yeah, I think you know the biggest advances we see in terms of getting the application of convergence is really in Europe, where it's very commonplace to see people walking around, getting most of what they want to watch on traditional television now on their cell phones, particularly sports content and entertainment content. And you also see the content creators and the telcos playing a very, very big role in this, liberation that convergence is bringing to them. You know, companies like Vodafone, in the UK, for example, have a very, very active content creation, a distribution, and a sales and marketing initiative incorporating ad sales for content to mobile devices. I think that, you know, in the U.S., when I look at the larger media companies, the traditional players, folks like CBS, and even to some extent organizations like Reuters, they're, you know, like the music company example that you gave, they're likely to reinvent themselves successfully, but they're still trying to recreate some familiar ground. They're still trying to do live events and recreate that whole appointment television experience on the web. And I think that kind of thinking, it's very expensive thinking, and for the traditional media players to really stay in the game, I think it's going to be a margin issue for them because they're spending and they're going to have to spend a lot of money to distinguish themselves from a lot of the startups that are coming in. And I think that's where the real battle is going to be.
So, I don't know, have any of you been to Akamai's headquarters here in Cambridge?
You're all welcome to.
Yeah. I love they have these big screens that show you all the internet traffic that they're managing all around the world. And I just love to, I mean, you're sitting on top of these trends around the world and looking at the changes in content. Can you give us a peek into what direction things appear to be heading and how it's different in different geographies?
Well, we're seeing dramatically more traffic than ever before, but that's been true every year. Even in the downturn, the internet growth didn't slow down. But it's certainly taken a step function in the last year because of broadband content. First music and now video, although largely still video in short form. And we're seeing traffic grow even faster internationally than in the U.S. So if you think of the graphs on our wall, they represent 24-hour chunks, and they look like a nice curve. And the valley, which was very pronounced a few years ago, was Europe and Asia, much less traffic in Europe and Asia. It's almost a flat line. There's still a little bit of a curve. In another 5 years, there will be a distinct curve, and the valleys will be North America because the growth is so much stronger internationally. Certainly, it makes sense on the one hand. You've got far more people, but you know, economically, that wasn't true in lots of other industries. The internet is leveling that playing field, and the growth of broadband, not just in Asia, but in Europe, is dramatic and more pronounced than here. The broadband available in Korea that you mentioned is far superior to the broadband most people here can get from any phone company or cable provider. So it's driving a lot more usage of entertainment content as well as business usage. Now, what we also see, though, is that performance globally is incredibly erratic. So in-country entertainment content may get sort of one level of performance, but as businesses try to use the internet and cross the oceans, they're still often stymied because the end users might have broadband, but the network in the middle doesn't cooperate.
So having looked at all of this content and all these users now, I'm going to ask what I think is the big question. It's at least the big question for the media company clients that we deal with at Forrester, and that is, are we going to displace television and traditional media with the internet? Is the internet going to replace broadcast media that's on a schedule? So I'm going to open this up. Go ahead. Whoever thinks they've got the answer to this.
I think the short answer is yes. But I don't know if it's the right question. Because I think that, you know, television is just a device. And really, it's a question of, is video going to displace text? And it really ultimately broadcast, if you look at the broadcasters, there is no barrier except traditional practice that stops them from broadcasting on the web. It's going to be a lot more competitive. And if you look at something that's not very often acknowledged, the broadcast brands are facing competition not just from internet players, but from traditional print titles that are migrating to the web and are now using video. So if you look at local markets like here in New England, the Boston Globe has video on its website, so it is a legitimate competitor to every local station in this market now in terms of getting high-impact visual content. So that's my perspective on it.
I would agree with that. I think in particular this notion that broadband levels the playing field in terms of who can be a multimedia programmer. And so rich media, video-centric, but broader rich media, the tools of production are so inexpensive, and effectively the cost of becoming a distributor of that has come to zero, so to speak. You can get started with a pretty rich model at low to no cost. And so amongst the folks that we work with, some of the most exciting are the New York Times, who's getting heavily into video. Smart Money Magazine turned into an online property, turned into a video distributor. Newsweek, a print publication turned online, now distributes a huge amount of rich media and video content with us. And then, interestingly, the television companies, so Discovery Communications has 13 television networks, they're launching broadband channels that include photojournalism, audio narration, so radio-style content, deep textual content. So the disciplines of media are converging in rich media, and all of the types of producers are bringing those together. So I think, the first kind of core question, will it displace TV as we know it or replace it? I think it will become an increasingly rich substitute good. But just as there's still an enormous number of people in the population that use terrestrial broadcast compared to cable or satellite, I think in 10 years or in 20 years, there'll still be an enormous number of people who pay a multi-channel subscription fee to a cable or satellite company, as well as a very, very large audience of people that access millions of channels of multimedia programming over the open internet. And so I think there'll be these sort of waves, and it'll be cumulative at one level. But I think that the transformations are pretty deep.
Let's take an audience poll here. If you believe that the internet is going to be, in terms of dollars generated, as important or more important a video medium than television, raise your hand. Yeah, in the next 10 years, the next 10 years. All right. If you believe that that's not true, raise your hand.
Brave
this
man.
Is an extremely entrepreneurial audience. Yeah, I don't believe that it's true either. Yeah. I think that we're going to see a huge rise in internet, but this may be the best thing that ever happened to
everything
television.
Everything takes a lot longer than we always think. It's you have to remember that in the U.S. market, the television advertising industry generates about $66 billion in revenue. The U.S. Broadband video advertising market is about a $250 million market. So it's a fraction of a percent. So it takes a really long time. The estimate is that by 2009 or 2010, it'll be a billion or a billion and a half. That's still not even a couple percent of that market.
Yeah, what Jeremy is saying, if you listen closely, is when my company goes public, there's a lot of growth ahead of us.
I think one of the other challenges, and I would say that the internet will displace some traditional media. It will not replace. And we still have movie theaters. We still have AM radio stations.
Right.
So there's lots of media. We still have newspapers. I think the big challenge for the established players is that the economic model is so different. So it's wonderful that newspapers have gone online, and they have to, and they have to put video on. But the challenge from an audience value is so different. Mm-hmm. It takes 50 to 100 online users of a newspaper site to equal one subscriber to the newspaper at home.
Yeah.
So if you think of the economic challenge to them as they hemorrhage subscribers, and we see this across daily newspapers across the country, just literally losing readers in droves, they need to replace everyone they lost with 50 to 100 new ones online. Mm-hmm. and they no longer have a monopoly on audience. A daily newspaper in a big city has a pretty good foothold in that market and ability to keep competition out. They don't have it in market even against local television stations, as Shoba indicated, or anyone coming in, including national media or down to local versions of search engines, trying to find 50 to 100 people to replace every lost customer is a staggering challenge.
Yeah. This is why you turned down that job as CEO of the New York Times Company, is that right?
I have a great deal of respect for them. My wife used to work there. My family was the first printer of the national edition of the New York Times. And they're a good Akamai customer. But they still have a tremendous, tremendous challenge moving from one to the other.
So, Vin, you're a pretty good example of what happens here with what's started to be called a lot long-tail content. Tell us what are the differences in dynamics when you're trying to energize a niche audience and the ways you generate revenue from that versus the way mass media behaves.
Well, we have to be pretty proactive in trying to really activate this audience. And we take the approach that really, it's kind of more of a classic approach in terms of promotion, where we do a good amount of PR. We reach out to a lot of the endemic publications in this market. We also go to the general market publications that happen to be in areas of high South Asian concentration, let's say like in New York City, the Bay Area, LA, and other parts of the country. We also do standard things just like media buying, search engine marketing. But with all that media buying, I mean, it's just like buying print ads. It's producing your TV spots and just making sure the presence is certainly there online. So a lot of these things are actually pretty effective for us in kind of reaching out to the community, because a lot of times the ads themselves are very much considered content. And then the last approach that we found that really works well is grassroots activation, where in this community in particular, as you know, most of the people in here know, it tends to organize, you know, around holidays, around certain events, cultural events and whatnot, and anywhere from like a couple hundred people all the way up to like 50 or 60,000 people. So we found it very effective to actually have like street teams out there and just to kind of engage the community on a one-on-one basis to let them know this content is available. And we've seen the results. I mean, we're very disciplined about trying to measure the effectiveness of a lot of our media expenditures to see what kind of impact that we have with the transactions on cable VOD. And it's great to be operating in a medium where, you know, we do have the flexibility of the ability to measure.
Anyone else on the panel want to weigh in on niche content versus mass content?
Sure. I'd be glad to. I mean, it's a core part of our business is to create a model where micro audiences can be serviced effectively and economically. And it's one of the unique things about the internet as a distribution platform for media is that you have a global audience. That audience can rapidly congregate around communities of interest and content areas of interests. You can effectively reach them instantly through search and affiliate networks and these very, very rich models, these grassroots models in some respects, as Vin describes them. And so, in addition, self-service-based systems for marketers and advertisers create a model where even those micro-markets can be serviced with advertising dollars, so the free-to-consumer offer is economically viable. And so, you know, it's interesting. I think one critical difference between, say, the blog sphere, which is a lot of long-tail niche content or niche websites, and broadband channels and this kind of programming is it definitely costs a lot more to create video, prepare video. Production values are more expensive and difficult to attain. And so there's a higher bar to move into this broadband programming space for niche content. You know, there's certainly the viral video work of cats falling off couches and so forth, and that those can be hits for, you know, a moment in time. But sort of predictable, reliable, quality content is very hard and expensive to produce. So I think there'll be a lot of efforts to produce this in the television market, but I think that unlike the web, where you can just get AdWords in a text page, I think getting meaningful sponsorship bases behind video programming is going to be a little bit more difficult to attain.
I think, though, that the marketing industry, if I look at the kind of customers that we deal with, the the prospect of tapping the long tail for them is an argument that helps, you know, is an ROI argument in underwriting the high cost of creating multimedia content, because they feel that the Internet's archival and searchability characteristics allow them to reach deep and far in a way that they haven't been able to. So, you know, one of I know one of the topics, Josh, that you were interested in was just the dynamics between media and advertisers. Mm-hmm. And I think as more people realize that their content can now travel much further and has a much longer shelf life because of the Internet, and it, you know, they can target and repurpose content for different audiences, you're going to see a lot more content generation.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting, especially right now, for those of you who may not be aware of it, this is the midst of the upfront advertising selling season, where Madison Avenue agencies and advertisers buy tens of billions of dollars worth of advertising from television networks. And first of all, the advertisers held out and said, we will not pay for recorded content on digital video recorders because they're skipping the commercials. They won that battle. And secondly, you're starting to see some real softness in the upfront, which I think is reflective of the fact that dollars are being held back and being spent, in many cases, online instead. So that's where the real money is in the advertising, and that money is definitely starting to shift. I want to talk a little bit about entrepreneurial opportunity here as a result of this, and I'm going to start again with a quick audience poll. How many of you have web TV? Wow, people at Microsoft are going to be very excited to hear that. How many of you have a TiVo or another digital video recorder at home? All right, pretty good collection here. How about Slingbox, the new product that lets you... So we got a smattering of people interested in Slingbox. This is one of the things we at Forrester have been looking at, is can you look at one of these new technologies and determine, as it starts off, is it going to end up looking more like web TV, or is it going to end up looking more like digital video recorders? And I'm going to throw things open to the panel here. It's my experience that entrepreneurs, as they come into contact with their customers and their investors and other entrepreneurs, often generate ideas that they can't take advantage of directly. So I'm asking you for free here to provide the best idea you've come across that somebody ought to take advantage of to get opportunity in this new world. Don't be stingy here. Come on.
I saw something interesting, actually, the other day. There was a sponsorship deal cut between Skittles, the candy, and the N, which is part of Viacom. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they kind of facilitated consumer mashups of professionally produced media. And the biggest hesitation that a lot of these media companies have, especially with their content online and putting it into communities, is that you don't know what's going to come out, especially if they have their own production tools that are available to them. And, you know, a quick anecdote on that was that I think Chevy Suburban did an online campaign where they encouraged consumers to come up with an ad for an SUV. And, you know, about 80% of the ads were very positive, and then it got in the hands of the people that are very concerned about global warming and whatnot, and just they just went to town, and they just had some very, very negative ads that came out there. And I think, you know, the people at Chevy certainly expected that going in. But I think that to the extent that you can help certain media companies that have a whole vault of different video and audio assets kind of put that online and give it to consumers where they have some sense of authorship and some sense of ownership and expression, and to be able to send that out to their friends is kind of a way in which you can take advantage of the medium.
So your idea is sort of user-generated marketing and advertising.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. You can get together with the investors afterwards and see what you can make out of this.
I'll comment on one which is not so much a technology opportunity, but a technology-enabled opportunity, which is I actually think that there's for the first time in really 6 years, I think creating internet-based content businesses is a good business. And I think there's an enormous opportunity for entrepreneurs to create multimedia programming businesses that exploit categories and niches on the internet. I'm seeing a lot of that kind of activity within our own business. So I'm seeing startups cropping up in every imaginable category of informational and entertainment and educational and other forms of content. And I think it's a really great time to identify a category, find a production company, and try and, you know, build and market that as a product on the internet. And so I'm very encouraged by that and think that that's a place where we'll see a lot of wealth creation take place.
And then you don't have to worry about the tools to get it up on the internet, because he'll help you out with that. I guess one other piece of entrepreneurial advice, don't compete with Akamai. It's a bad idea. Okay, I want to thank the members of the panel here for their insights.